Shalom and welcome everyone to today's ICEJ webinar. We're glad you've joined us. I'm David Parsons coming to you from the TV studios of the International Christian Embassy here in Jerusalem. We're so glad you've joined us for what's going to be a very timely and informative talk on the question, is Israel starving Gaza? And throughout the past almost 2 years now of Israel's battle with Hamas in Gaza, much has been said and written about the humanitarian situation there, including repeated claims that Israel is deliberately starving the people of Gaza to achieve its war aims. But are these claims credible? And the issue leapt back into the headlines recently, just in the last couple weeks, when photos of a young Palestinian boy in very poor condition found themselves on the front pages of newspapers around the world. Here he is above the fold on the cover of the New York Times in very poor condition, as you can see. But it turns out this child had pre-existing conditions, perhaps congenital, that was always in poor health, and that Israel had helped take and transport him to Italy for proper care there. But the lie was already racing around the world, with France redoubling its efforts to end the conflict in Gaza by birthing a Palestinian state. And other leading media kept pushing the line that Israel is starving the Gazans on purpose. You have Time magazine here, the Gazan tragedy. But it turns out there's evidence that a lot of these photos are staged, that people are waiting in line. Of course, people are hungry. There's food insecurity. But here they're waiting in line, and for the photographers, fellow Gazan photographers, they're, you know, looking desperate, but here comes the food and they all get fed and you don't see that. And this was exposed recently by Bild magazine in Germany, showing a Palestinian photographer getting people to pose for the camera before the food was actually handed out. And then amid this whole tumult, Hamas and Islamic Jihad released two videos of really thin, emaciated, despondent Israeli hostages. This is Evyatar David. In the video, it's very, very painful to watch. He's saying, I had a few lentils on this day, a few here, no food here. He's keeping track on a calendar of what he eats, and you can see he's clearly being starved. And the Hamas responded, well, everyone is hungry. Well, here's part of the video with someone who's watching him, guarding him, handing him something, and it turns out he's pretty healthy, as you can see by that arm. And this is Rom Bravlosky, also just in a despondent condition and barely hanging on to life. And so to help us understand what has actually been happening in Gaza, we're honored to welcome today's featured guest, Danish reporter Yotam Confino. Good to see you, Yotam.
Thank you for having me, David.
Yeah. Now, a little more background. Yotam is one of the most knowledgeable journalists reporting directly from Israel and Gaza on the situation there over the past 2 years. He has covered Gaza for numerous international media outlets. Okay, let's look at this list. The Daily Telegraph, CBS News, BBC, USA Today, Daily Mail, The Times Radio, and the leading Danish newspaper, BT. His frontline access and experience make him one of the best informed with firsthand sources of knowledge on the humanitarian situation in Gaza. and the whole issue of the reported hijacking of food shipments, why so many delays in aid deliveries, and all the other challenges of humanitarian aid in the midst of this war. So Yotam, we're glad you've joined us. And give us some more background on, you know, your career as a reporter. And I think you've become known more as an investigative journalist who really likes to dig into your subjects.
Thanks for the kind introduction, David. So I moved to Israel in 2018 to become a Middle East correspondent. And I started working for the Israeli English news channel called I-24 News. And I began as a writer. I was writing articles, news articles for their website. And slowly but surely, I expanded into TV and radio. And since then, I've been covering the Israeli-Palestinian conflict on a daily basis, really. And of course, after October the 7th, it really took off because the amount of work was just unfathomable, really. It still is. The demand for people on the ground who are here, who speak the language, who understand the nuances, the ins and the out, the demand keeps just being there. So I still am working, obviously, for many different outlets, and I try to also do investigative journalism as much as I can. A lot of my reporting is also straight up news to simply just explain what's happening on the ground, but I also try to dig deeper. And of course, as you mentioned here, the whole issue of whether Israel is starving Gaza deliberately, that's probably one of the most interesting aspects of this whole war.
And what led you to focus on the whole humanitarian crisis in Gaza, the aid delivery? Was it something that you saw in the biased media coverage against Israel that said, I got to go in here and dig out the truth?
Look, I think already in the beginning of the war, when we saw the first images of heavily armed Palestinians hijacking trucks with aid in Gaza, I knew this is something that's going to explode eventually because it's not being reported properly. And if Palestinian terror groups or gangs, however you want to refer to them, if they steal aid from civilians, eventually there'll be starvation-like areas in Gaza. And I knew for a fact that who was going to be blamed for this was obviously going to be Israel. So I kept a close eye on how much aid was entering. I kept a close eye on how it was reported. And I kept asking myself, I don't understand how this war, there are so many, not even deadlines, but constant doomsday warnings about famine, of Gaza being on the brink of famine, brink of starvation. We heard that continuously for 22 months, and it never actually really materialized until recently. Not famine, but certain areas in Gaza where I would say that there probably is starvation. So for me, it was extremely interesting to see these constant reports and us journalists having to report on it, having to say the UN is once again warning about Gaza being on the brink of famine. How long can you be on the brink of famine? That was something that I kept asking myself because aid was coming in. So eventually, of course, after these horrible images of very, very sick Palestinian children were on the covers of the biggest newspapers in the world, and Hamas ramped up their propaganda, and the NGOs started warning about proper starvation, I knew there had to be more nuance to this. So that's why I and many other journalists went to see, for example, the Kerem Shalom border crossing that separates Gaza from Israel, where piles and piles of aid was waiting to be picked up by the United Nations. And I saw it with my own eyes, because I knew that the images being sent out from the IDF, that was not going to be enough for the world and not enough for journalists. We have to see it ourselves. So I went there to see it. Now, I want to dig in just a little bit deeper in this whole battle between the United Nations and Israel, because the truth is somewhere in the middle. Israel is not obviously blameless in all of this, but so the United Nations is also not. The United Nations has a couple of arguments for why this aid has not been picked up. By the way, there are still hundreds of pallets of aid waiting for the UN to get picked up. But the United Nations had a couple of arguments. Firstly, they said bureaucracy is simply making it almost impossible for our truck drivers to actually get into these heavily secured areas to pick up the aid in time and to start driving into Gaza before it gets dark. That argument I actually understand, because I know that the IDF is extremely bureaucratic, and I'm sure that they haven't made life easy for many of those truck drivers. But the second argument that I really could not buy was the fact that it was not safe for the trucks to pick up aid and to deliver into Gaza. And why am I not buying this? I'm not buying it because the United Nations has been offered repeatedly by the IDF and by the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation to secure their trucks, but they turned that offer down. You're not making it easier for yourself if you're blaming Israel for the lack of safety, but you don't want to take their soldiers to escort you. And one last thing about this, I was on a briefing with the IDF that told me that they had spoken to the UN about this particular issue. And they kept saying, well, we can't be seen as taking part in the conflict. In other words, we cannot have the IDF escorting our trucks because that would mean that we're part of the conflict. But the spokesperson who briefed us said they wanted instead the blue police in Gaza to escort them. The blue police are Hamas. Now, I thought that was astonishing. So I reached out to the World Food Program. I asked them about this. I am yet to hear back from them. It's been 3 weeks now.
Yeah, it's political. And the truth is the Palestinian people in Gaza are used as pawns, even by the United Nations. Let me ask, the Bild article sort of focuses that a lot of the reporting, people on the ground reporting from Gaza, they're Palestinians, they're pro-Hamas, and some of the international media is saying the IDF doesn't allow independent journalists access to get into Gaza. What's been your experience on this? Because it seems you've been able to get in at certain points.
Yeah, it's true that Israel does not allow journalists to freely enter Gaza, and that is appalling. And I still, to this day, I do not understand the reason why they wouldn't. I understand why they're worried that top journalists from CNN and New York Times would be accidentally killed in Israeli bombings, and that would cause huge outroar. But, you know, that's not a reason not to let people into a war zone. If I go into Gaza, it is, you know, my responsibility. I can't hold the IDF responsible if I enter a war zone. The same goes for Ukraine. The same goes for any other war zone. So that argument by the IDF is just not valid. And it's quite literally making Israel's case much, much harder for them to argue in the international scene. When it comes to embeds, which is something that some of us are allowed to join, it's essentially you go with the army, you go with military, with soldiers, you go into Gaza for a couple of hours, and you get to see either border crossings or you get to see tunnels built by Hamas. So it's obviously carefully orchestrated by Israel, but there's nothing unusual about these embeds. It happens everywhere in the world, and every single major media outlet in the world have joined these embeds. I can say that because I was with them, The Economist, The Wall Street Journal, New York Times, CNN. I've been with all of them in South Lebanon and sometimes in Gaza. So Israel is, of course, making it much easier for Hamas to control information coming out of Gaza. A lot of the international media rely on people on the ground who, in my view, are not reliable journalists. Many of them have quite openly celebrated terror, celebrated October the 7th. Many of them are quite literally Hamas propagandists, and they are still seen as their sources on the ground. By the way, the same goes for some of the doctors at some of the hospitals, the leader of the Al-Shifa hospital. If you go to his Facebook account, you will see him praising Hamas. Now, he might be a good doctor, he might be good at saving people, but as a reliable eyewitness, not a chance. So when it comes to the information being heavily controlled by Hamas, it's one of the reasons why we're seeing this skewed coverage, because they control the narrative. They control what's coming out of Gaza. If you dare report something against Hamas, something critical about Hamas, If you dare go out and cover some of the demonstrations taking place against Hamas, you will either be threatened, beaten up, or you could end up getting killed. And that's not me saying that. That's the Committee to Protect Journalists that actually wrote a whole article about how absolutely abhorrent it is for freedom of speech inside Gaza. There are so few brave Palestinian journalists who dare speak up against Hamas. So that's why we're seeing these carefully orchestrated photos. We're seeing carefully orchestrated videos from some of the sites where Israel allegedly massacred Palestinians waiting for aid. And again, Israel is quite, unfortunately, they have themselves to blame for this because they're not allowing us to go in freely and cover it ourselves.
I think as we look back at almost 2 years of war, there was a sort of a pivot point where, up until that time, journalists could get in through the Rafah crossing, the aid was coming in, and Hamas was basically controlling the aid to keep control over the people. But then, I guess it was about a year ago, Israel took control of the Rafah crossing, which was the last crossing they didn't have control of. In southern Gaza, goes out into Egypt, into the Sinai. And from then on, all the way to the Philadelphia corridor, Israel had security control there, and they weren't letting journalists in. I think at that point, the UN and all these other countries said, we will not send any more aid in until Israel withdraws from the Rafah crossing. This was a political position. And I think the bottom line question here, Yotam, we can ask, is Israel starving Gaza? But the bottom line question is, are the people of Gaza starving? And I think that's a question we all want answered, that we all would have sympathy for them. And if they are, who's causing it? So can you address that?
Yeah, I will. I'll try my best from being on the outside of Gaza. I will try my best here. I don't think there's any doubt that there are certain people in Gaza who are starving. What I don't think is that you can hold Israel 100% responsible for this. I think it's far-fetched to say that Israel is deliberately starving Gaza when nearly 2 million tons of aid entered Gaza since October the 7th. If we're looking at just the past couple of weeks, every single day, countries like Egypt, Jordan, the Emirates, Belgium, France, the UK, they're dropping hundreds of tons of aid from the air. That's in addition to the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation handing out between 1 and 2 million meals every single day to civilians. And you have roughly between 2 to 250 trucks being picked up by UN and other NGOs at the border crossings. But some of that aid, or the majority of that aid, is being looted. According to the United Nations, nearly 90% of all of the trucks, the 2,604 trucks that were collected from the border crossing since May 19th and distributed inside Gaza, 88% of those trucks were looted. And they themselves admitted it. They say either by hungry Palestinians or by armed groups. If you have that kind of record, nearly 90% of your aid being stolen, of course you will have people starving in Gaza because the people who steal it, some of them sell the commodities on the black market, for sky-high prices. You know, you have to pay insane amounts for a kilo of sugar, a kilo of flour. And so I would say that the problem is not so much that Israel has been at times blocked aid because they did, which was a very stupid move. They did that earlier this year in an attempt to strong arm Hamas into reaching a ceasefire. But throughout the war, aid has entered Gaza. The problem lies with the distribution of the aid. It's simply not being distributed fairly. And what I think here is that I don't understand how the United Nations and other NGOs, who themselves admit that they don't know how to secure their aid, they're still so political that they will not cooperate with the GHF. They won't take any of their services. They will rather continue to try their best to deliver this aid, knowing that probably 90% of it is getting looted.
What's your experience with this Gaza Humanitarian Fund? Of course, you're talking about March 1, Israel launched this Operation Gideon's Chariots, and we're going to go and take more control of Gaza. And it was a decision in large part to get a ceasefire, but also to rob Hamas of the control of the food, which allowed him to control the people. And this Gaza Humanitarian Fund was set up as an alternative distributor of aid, now headed by an American evangelical, Johnny Moore. He's been fighting the UN, the New York Times, the BBC, and all the lies. And you think they've been doing a good job?
I think, considering the fact that they were established not that long ago, and the fact that they had to operate in a war zone, and the fact that they had to very quickly try to reach as many people in Gaza as possible, I think they've done a fairly good job. Look, up until now, since May 19th, they've delivered more than 100 million meals to Palestinians in Gaza. I don't think that that's something that you can belittle. Have they made mistakes? Absolutely. Has there been chaos around some of their distribution sites? For sure. Have some people been killed? Absolutely. But we have to look at the reason why we see all of this chaos. Hamas said from day one, when it was announced that GHF was going to be in charge of distributing aid in Gaza, they said no Gazans should cooperate. No Gazans should dare go there and pick up aid. And if you do, you'll face the consequences. And Hamas has quite literally since then done everything they could to sabotage GHF's work. They sent out fake messages on behalf of GHF to try to confuse civilians in Gaza about their opening hours, to try and create as much chaos as possible. They've been inside those areas. They've been among some of the civilians, armed. Sometimes they've thrown hand grenades at the workers from GHF. One incident led to the killing of 20 people because they created so much chaos. It was a stampede. 20 people were killed because of Hamas people inside that area. And Hamas are also executing Palestinians left and right if they steal aid or if they dare cooperate with the GHF. They killed 12 Palestinian workers from GHF, executed them. So no wonder that GHF has a hard time doing this smoothly, because they have a terror group that is doing everything in their power to disrupt, destroy, smear, and frighten any Palestinian who dare pick up aid from their sites.
Back on the question of are the people of Gaza starving, and I know there are different measures that the international community uses for daily food consumption, calories and such. Have you sort of ferreted out how well that is going down there? If there's enough food, it's just being hoarded and not evenly distributed. That's the problem.
That's the problem. There's also another problem. It's that some of the food that gives you more nutrition, such as meat, eggs, vegetables, for example, we haven't seen that entering Gaza for a while. Yes. Most of the commodities that enter Gaza, it's pasta, it's lentils, it's flour, sugar, you know, things that can fill you up and you can get the calories that you need, but it's not really going to give you the proper nutrition. So that's also a problem. And that's why we've seen, up until recently at least, we've seen some of those commodities, meat and stuff, being sold at horrific prices. You even had restaurants. I remember seeing some videos from markets in Gaza where you had shawarma stands and you had something that looked like a relatively normal bazaar, but obviously the prices were horrific, so many Palestinians couldn't take part in that at all. So in terms of the calories, again, nearly 2 million tons of aid entering Gaza, the majority of that has been food, and the majority of aid that enters Gaza now is food. According to the UN, it's roughly 90%, I think even more than that, and maybe 98% of all aid that enters Gaza now, it's food, because that's the most that's the thing they need. So I think if you calculate it roughly, it's hard, obviously, because you have 2.2 million people, and to take every commodity and try to see how many calories is in it, it's a bit difficult. But roughly, this is not, I would say, what looks like deliberate starvation. The reason why people jump to that conclusion is because, again, Israel really did themselves a horrible favor by blocking aid for 2 months this year, because that is a signal you're sending to the world: we're not allowing aid in to essentially strong arm Gaza. So that's why people are saying, look, they're starving them. It's you could call it a weaponizing aid, but overall, in the past nearly 2 years, aid has entered Gaza on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think Israel, this charge that Israel is starving the people of Gaza, it's gained some traction because you have certain right-wing members of the Israeli government, even cabinet, in decision-making positions like Ben-Gavir and Smotrich, who say, you know, there's no obligation for Israel to feed its enemies, and we should actually, you know, lay siege, a good old medieval siege on Gaza to get our hostages back. But Israel hasn't taken that route. There was a strategy for 80 days starting March 1 to try, and I think part of it, there was tons of food in Gaza. Hamas was hoarding it, and it was to try and force the international community, the UN and all, to get that food out to the people. That seemed to me what was going on.
Exactly. That, look, one of the reasons why I have a very hard time trusting what comes out of the UN is because they're lying about certain things. Just yesterday, 2 days ago, I heard an interview on Danish radio with a representative of the UN who was asked by the host, is Hamas or gangs looting aid? He said no. He's going against his own organization, which might not have mentioned Hamas specifically, but they're mentioning gangs very specifically. So, you know, it's very hard to take them serious because they are, at this point, I would say, a part of the war. They've clearly chosen the side, a side here. They're with the Palestinians. If they really had the civilians in Gaza, if they had their best interest at heart, I would say that they would have done much more to speak out about the openly hijacking of aid, not only by gangs, but also by Hamas. You can ask yourself this question. If Hamas hadn't taken any aid whatsoever in nearly 2 years, they would have been dead by now. They don't have aid stockpiled for 40, 50,000 Hamas members for 2 years. They don't have that. But you also have former hostages. With Eli Sharabi, for example, testified before the UN Security Council. He said they were eating like kings. They brought UN food, UN aid down in the tunnels. They ate it more or less in front of us. They didn't give us anything. Other hostages have said the same. The BBC, of all outlets, just came out today with a report saying that they're basically, according to their sources, Hamas has definitely stolen aid, especially in the period of the last ceasefire. So when you have all of these testimonies, all of that, this obvious fact, and you have United Nations refusing to condemn it, to talk about it, to investigate it, to me, that's just doing yourself a disservice, and you don't have the civilians in Gaza and their interest at heart, I would say.
Yeah, I think regarding the United Nations and the international community, the original sin was when they forced the civilians of Gaza to stay on the battlefield. No one could leave Gaza to escape the fight that was coming. Everyone knew it was coming. And I don't know if there's another instance in modern times of a war situation like this that innocent civilians were forced to stay and locked in on the battlefield for their own political reasons. And that's made it difficult for Israel.
It's a very, very good point, and it's something that we don't talk about too often. Why on earth do these people, these poor people, why do they have to be in this war zone? There's the biggest desert right next door, the Sinai Desert. But the Egyptian president, al-Sisi, made it very clear a long time ago that he is ready to sacrifice millions of lives to protect Egyptian sovereignty. In other words, they can go to hell. If you really care that much about the Palestinians, why don't you take a small, tiny area of the Sinai Desert, create a humanitarian safe zone where Israeli bombs will not fall? You have every country almost in the world lining up to help the Palestinians, field hospitals, food, anything you can think of. Unlike the people of Sudan and Yemen and Syria and many other places, the Palestinians are the most popular people when it comes to aid organizations and countries around the world who are willing to help them. But they don't want to have them leaving Gaza. Instead, they accuse Israel of ethnic cleansing because they ask people to evacuate areas before they bomb them. Now, that's one of the most astonishing arguments I've heard, I think, in the whole war, is that Israel is being lambasted. It is being vilified for asking civilians in Gaza to evacuate. Israel waited several weeks before they entered Gaza, northern Gaza, before they actually launched the ground invasion. They waited several weeks because they needed the civilians in the heavily populated areas to leave northern Gaza. I don't recall any other country in the history of modern warfare waiting and waiting and waiting to strike their enemy before civilians could get out that way. Vladimir Putin certainly doesn't do that. We didn't do that in Iraq and Afghanistan, as far as I'm concerned, having that long periods where we constantly want people to evacuate. It's one of the, again, one of the misconceptions of the war. It's not ethnic cleansing to ask somebody to leave a place where you're going to target a terror group. It's not. Is it horrific for them? For sure. Are they having a good time in there? And not at all. They're living in hell. But again, it's not Israel's fault. You can't put the blame on Israel 100%. If anything, you would have to hold Hamas responsible for the misery that's going on there, including the areas that are experiencing starvation.
Yeah. I think the best comparison is in the Ukraine war, where this large city of Mariupol was surrounded by the Russians, and they were pounding it with artillery, this crushing blows of the Russian way of waging war. And the whole international community insisted on humanitarian corridors to let food and aid in and to let civilians flee. And they insisted on it day after day after day. And you haven't heard one voice throughout the international community that has pleaded that for the sake of the Palestinians. And so I say the whole world bears culpability for what the suffering that has happened in Gaza as a result. Is it true that it's been my sense Hamas has done as much as it can to keep control of the food supply, because it's their last way of keeping control of the people of Gaza? There's all sorts of indications that people are tired of them, they want to get rid of them, but controlling the food is controlling the people.
It is, and that's why I want to go back to the whole discussion about whether Hamas is looting aid or not. Look, they have to pay their members. They have 20, 25,000 fighters at this point, even though roughly the same amount has been killed. All of these people need paychecks. They aren't doing this for free. Hamas might have stockpiled hundreds of millions of dollars in tunnels and whatnot, but eventually they're running out of money, and they need food to. These people need to eat, so of course they're taking part in this aid. By the way, if you look at some of those trucks that were hijacked by Palestinian armed Palestinians, sometimes you see dozens of armed Palestinians. Now there are gangs inside Gaza that could potentially produce dozens of armed Palestinians, but more often than not, they either collaborate with Hamas or they are sometimes in direct conflict with Hamas. But I think it's naive to say that all of those trucks where you see a lot of armed Palestinians hijack and aid, that all of that are gangs. That's simply not true. So yes, they try to control aid coming in because it's a way to control the population. And it's also a way to prolong the war as much as possible. Hamas's main goal is to make life in Gaza for civilians as miserable as possible. Not only having them being killed in airstrikes when they hide behind civilians in hospitals and schools and in UN installations in the mosques, but to also have them starve. Because if there's something that can move the needle in the international system when it comes to condemnation, it's images of starved children, because this is something that most people simply cannot accept. So when they control food, when they steal food, and they make sure to parade these poor children for photographs, they know exactly what kind of reaction there'll be. Look what happened after the last wave of starvation talk erupted. Several countries recognized Palestine as a state. France did it. The UK are expected to do that in September. Canada as well. And Hamas has said this is the fruit of October the 7th. We are winning. This is a victory for us. So they are doing everything by the book, according to themselves, obviously.
Yeah, it was interesting that in the midst of that, it's causing such a tumult, and here are nations recognizing wanting to recognize a Palestinian state as the solution for all this. It's crazy. It's madness. But then they release these two videos where you see Israeli hostages starving. And it seems to have backfired to some degree. It's meant as psychological warfare against Israel, but a lot of the world has seen it. They're not willing to admit it, but this is deliberate starving of the hostages. And even the Red Cross came under pressure. You got to do something about this.
I'm happy you're bringing it up, because there are several things about those videos that reminds us what Israel is fighting against. And it's something that the world has forgotten, because the media just doesn't talk about hostages at all. I don't remember the last time I was asked about the hostages. That is obviously before the videos came out. So first of all, the videos were so carefully orchestrated to put the blame on Israel, to essentially say that what you're seeing in the video is how we look. This is what Hamas allegedly looks like. They're not, because they send out videos often on their Telegram showing how they fight against Israel in Gaza in civilian clothes with RPG rockets on their shoulders. And I can tell you from having seen hundreds of those videos at this point, none of them even look remotely close to what Eviatar David did. None of them. Some of them are slightly obese. So that was, I would say, astonishing for them to put this out, such blatant propaganda that they knew that most media would pick up, and still they did it. Imagine how confident you have to be to put out a video to the world where most rational people can see that you are committing crimes against humanity. You do that knowing that pressure is still going to be on Israel. That is how skewed and how biased not only coverage of Israel Hamas war is, but also the international system. The UN could barely get themselves to condemn Hamas for that. They put out a statement saying the starvation is illegal, yada yada. They didn't mention Hamas. The Red Cross, the first tweet I saw, didn't mention Hamas. They're mentioning this as if Hamas is not part of the equation. And Hamas knows this, and that's why they are openly and confidently putting out the most horrific videos you can imagine, because they know it's not going to really cause any damage for them.
We want to try and wrap up here. It's been my sense over these past 2 years that the whole food, it's the part of the propaganda battle. But I have a lot of Christian friends who they look at some of the videos of, say, the shawarma stands in Gaza and all, and they say, look, no one's starving. I believe there are pockets of hunger in Gaza, and I'd much rather be on this side of the conflict than stuck in Gaza and relying on the world to come feed me. It's kind of like in scripture where God says, if I was hungry, I wouldn't tell you. If I was hungry, I wouldn't tell the UN. That when they use the Gazans as political pawns. But there are pockets of hunger in Gaza, and a poor diet. among people who are powerless. They don't have weapons. They don't have, you know, that they're not going to take the risk their lives to go hijack a truck or go break into a food warehouse. And it's clans that get armed and hoard the food, because food right now is the currency of Gaza. And that seems to be the situation. And you can, everyone shares the blame, whether it's Israel, the UN, and but especially Hamas. Hamas, in their eyes, they benefit from the suffering of the Palestinian people. Is that a clear picture of what you've found in your reporting in Gaza?
I think that's a really good summary of what the situation is like. I still, to this day, don't understand how on October the 8th, the world did not rally to have Hamas simply surrender and release the hostages. The world should have united to put pressure on Qatar, because Qatar is the main funder, not one of the main funders, sponsors of Hamas. They had their leadership, still have, in four-star hotels. The world should have told Qatar, we're gonna kick you out of whatever organization you're part of. We're gonna cut diplomatic ties if you don't hand over every single Hamas leader in your hotels immediately and bring them to The Hague. That would have been a normal reaction. Instead, we have 2 years later Benjamin Netanyahu facing, you know, accusations of war crimes, and the leaders of Hamas are dead. But, you know, they brought the destruction on Gaza. And you have essentially most NGOs saying that Israel is deliberately starving Gaza, instead of trying to explain some of the nuances and trying to explain to people that that there are terror groups in Gaza who directly contribute to some of the starvation that we see in certain areas, like you said, pockets of starvation. And I think it's appalling. And I really feel for the Palestinian children in Gaza who've done nothing to deserve this misery that they're in.
And are there any chances you see of a ceasefire and hostage release on the horizon? It seems pretty hopeless right now.
I think the foreign minister said it pretty well the other day at the UN Security Council. He said the nations that recognized a Palestinian state in recent weeks, they essentially assassinated a ceasefire, because the minute that Hamas could tell that the world was going to really start ganging up on Israel again, vilify Israel, recognize a Palestinian state, what incentive was there for them to end the war? Keir Starmer, the UK Prime Minister, literally said, if there's no ceasefire by September, we will recognize a Palestinian state. In Hamas's ears, what they're hearing is that, great, we'll just continue the war until September and we get a state. That's what they want, you know? So no, I don't think there's any ceasefire on the horizon. I do think that Israel will likely today probably approve a decision to occupy parts of Gaza. And I think we're going to see this plan probably materialize in the coming weeks, or at least troops will start being called up for this major undertaking. And it's just going to throw Israel and Hamas into yet more turmoil, more war. And I do think that the hostages are going to be the ones that pay the price for this, unfortunately, and the civilians in Gaza.
Yeah, and there's IDF officials saying that to occupy these areas, the Israeli troops will be open to ambushes from the tunnels, and it's going to affect the fate of the hostages. So it's a really tough decision, a real crossroads again for Israel in Gaza. And we just hope people keep praying and for an end to this, and Israel to finally claim victory. My sense is that Israel has battered Hezbollah. They've really humiliated Iran. The Syrian Assad regime is gone. There's still trouble in Syria, but Israel has had, they've, you know, really weakened Hamas, and they would be able to claim victory without these hostages. And not only Hamas, but the whole world is trying once again to deny Israel a victory in this battle by prolonging this whole standoff. But we thank you, Yotam Confino, a Danish reporter. I've been reporting on Gaza for the last 2 years. We really appreciate your time and your insights, firsthand knowledge of what's happening there. All the best as you continue covering this.
Thank you, David. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Okay, that's it for this week's ICEJ webinar. We hope you join us next Thursday, 3 in the afternoon, Israel time. We'll have another interesting topic to cover, but I bless you from Jerusalem.